I'm Scott Martin at the Wall Street Reporter. Today we're talking with Christopher Friedman out in Beverly Hills, where he's senior analyst for the Wealth Advisor. They're best known for dealing with high net worth households, consulting with the people who build the robot investment platforms. He knows technology, he knows the financials, but I was surprised to hear him wax rhapsodic on a few biotech themes as well. Evidently, what drives the thoughts of the affluent people drives the economy as a whole. They're thinking about healthcare front and center. They want to live forever. Hello, Chris. Welcome aboard.
This call is now being recorded.
Welcome. This is Scott Martin for the Wall Street Reporter, and today I'm talking to Christopher Friedman. He's the senior analyst for the Wealth Advisor. That's thewealthadvisor.com. And Chris, I think my first question is, you know, what is the Wealth Advisor all about? How do you invest, and what's your position on the market right now?
Hey, Scott. Good talking to you today. That's a good question. The Wealth Advisor, I mean, the mission here is, like, pretty simple to describe, but we spend all of our time refining execution. We're about the intersection of finance and technology, the leading edge of where the future finds us. And as William Gibson says, the future is never evenly distributed. So that's where the investment opportunities emerge for us to exploit before they become the status quo. It means banking. It means fintech. We love fintech. Lately, it even means biotech. Wellness, diet, preventative care, aging. I mean, that's what everyone in Silicon Valley is doing. And high net worth families want to live forever. Silicon Valley billionaires are looking to live forever. And realistically, fund managers and analysts and wealth managers, I mean, the average age is like 56 and a half years old at this point, so pushing 60 on average. And Warren Buffett won't see 90 ever again. So aging is critical to all of us in the financial industry, and this is where we pay to extend our economic careers because we can.
That is interesting. I've never heard anything like that. So it sounds like on one level, it's sort of turning the mirror back and taking the trends the industry uses and the industry gives off to then find the investment ideas, and it feeds back on itself in an interesting way. I'm going to have to think more about that, but in the meantime, I did hear the magic word today, which is biotech, and tell me about what we're seeing in healthcare these days.
I mean, biotech is definitely the magic word. I mean, you're going to have to give me a minute because this is a large subject and we're passionate over here about the Wealth Advisor. But last year was far from high flying season for the biotech group, but now these stocks are hot, like extremely hot. 26 stocks are up 80% or more in the past 4 weeks, 22
wow.
of them biotech, or what we call biotech adjacent, screening kits and lab services, companies like that. I mean, obviously, that has something to do with coronavirus, but that doesn't mean that there aren't opportunities brewing within the sector. Needless to say, we want to focus on accumulating blockbusters at bargain prices while screening out as much of the dead money as possible. And right now, I think the next big blockbuster could be in the gene therapy space. It's an interesting space because gene therapy theoretically opens up some of the most transformative benefits of biotech medicine by repairing or replacing errors in the genetic code. These errors can include inherited blindness and other hereditary conditions, as well as mutations that can trigger cancer and other fatal diseases. Fixing the gene eliminates the problem at the source. However, genetic disorders tend to be rare in the general population, which means fewer potential patients to amortize the
disease. Oh, yeah, I get that. Okay.
Yeah.
I see where you're going. I like this.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah,
so the business is tricky. In theory, it's great.
It can be small. In general, it's like, you know, the rarer conditions and therefore like higher bills or, you know, either covered by insurance companies, but they generally aren't even going to cover this kind of thing at this point. So we're looking at a pretty exclusive client base. And on the surface, classic all or nothing binary position. if the science works, the company that invested in its development can improve the human condition and build a profitable business at the same time. Otherwise, the time and money are just out the window. They're wasted, you know? In the first scenario, shareholders make money. In the second, there's really nothing you can do. You're totally out of luck.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking, you know, A, huge therapies, and B, it's just, if they cap drug prices like they're talking, there's just no way these companies can ever make money. So great therapy, great idea, you know, helping lives, never a business, never really, it's always a broken stock. And so are you seeing these companies actually wrestling with these issues, or are they still like working it like on a 2015 playbook?
I mean, it's hard to dictate what's going to happen, but like right now, the economies of scale and some of these therapies only make sense on the order of a million or more per treatment. That's with the only one currently on the market cost to cure a rare blood disease that affects maybe 28,000 people worldwide. I mean, it's a fantastic technology. I mean, gene therapy really does push the future, but that truly cures the underlying enzyme. This one only would cure the underlying enzyme deficiency within 28,000 people at $1 million per shot. And then you're done. You've eradicated the disease in the current population, and the revenue window is closed. So, yeah, huh. I mean, it's difficult. I mean, needless to say, something like this would be a huge immediate price tag for each patient, even though it can mean the difference between life and death. $1 million is, you know, something out of reach for almost everyone. So it raises huge questions about financing arrangements, sustainable revenue, and the ultimate economic value of an individual.
Wow. I'm going to have to, break in there because I'm just doing the math. So 28,000 people, $1 million a shot. In theory, that's a $28 billion drug. But then, but then you are done, as you say. You know, everybody's cured. So that drug is done. And then presumably you move on to the next therapy. But that doesn't really wrestle with that $1 million price tag. How do people pay for that? Is there a system in place? Are the companies working with it? How do we answer those questions?
I mean, the companies are, you know, as these companies they're forcing answers to these questions, right?
Okay.
Patients like creating something like that. The questions are being asked, and therefore, you know, pricing structures will evolve one way or another. People are going to put an amount on their life. And as we were saying earlier, like everyone wants to live longer right now. And if they don't, regulatory approval doesn't really even matter. From a long-term successful drug, you know, that would eradicate something like this needs to be profitable, but it can't sell on a profitable basis. And even like we're discussing like getting through an FDA process before we even get to a market cap like that. So it's tough, you know.
Okay.
And there's really just like not many companies out there doing it right now.
That makes sense. Okay, well, who do you like?
We like Unicure. That's certainly someone we can get behind. It's a Dutch company. They made headlines back in 2012 for getting the first genetic therapy approved in any global market. So since then, it's small but quantifiable franchise selling $1 million Ribera shot to Europeans born with a rare blood enzyme deficiency. Wall Street loves the story, with the analysts generally arguing that the technology is worth like $90 per share.
Okay.
But I mean, in the here and now, this is already a $65 stock, even though the disease that Glybera repairs is so rare that the company's revenue has been limited to only 1 to 3 shots per quarter. That's the potential. Tiny markets, narrow revenue streams, big valuations, though. throughout the European Union, maybe 300 people are even eligible for this treatment. So the overall patient population Cure is working with could take decades to address.
Wow, okay. I'm just doing that math, too. So 3 shots a quarter, 12 shots a year, $12 million. It makes sense. It proves the model. It's still almost theoretical. I don't even know if that's real money. Yeah.
I mean, even a little cash flow is a whole lot better than pure cash flow.
Good point.
And as it happens, Cure is trading at roughly 1x the lifetime revenue it can expect to capture from its current addressable population. So we're looking at those 300 Europeans with a genetic deficiency of 100 million per Cure, as you're saying, supporting a market capitalization of roughly 300 million right now.
Okay.
But so where Cure gets interesting is that the 300 million is its first drug unlocked. It's really only a commercial proof of the gene therapy concept. Okay. So like the company has reported encouraging results from phase 1 and phase 2 trials of a similar enzyme replacement therapy targeting a rare form of childhood brain degradation. But the real blockbuster prospect is a hemophilia treatment that could cure around 15,000 Europeans. And that's just Europeans. Like, hemophilia is a worldwide issue. And that's, like, really only what we can see right now. So as much as it's a proof of concept, there's things in the pipeline. It's moving forward.
Okay. That light bulb finally went off for me. Okay, so proof of concept, baby drug, but it's a platform play. Baby drug leads to baby drug, leads to big drug. I hear you there. Hemophilia is big.
Yeah.
And if they can crack that one, okay.
I mean, if either of those last two we're talking about therapies come to market, the dollar-for-dollar benchmark indicates that Cure could trade at a high multitude of its current price 3 years from now. While both could falter along the way, the potential returns are high enough to make this stock attractive as part of a wider portfolio of all-or-nothing prospects. Should Cure score even like a small hit, it should more than make up for at least one burnout and vice versa.
Cool.
And to be fair, Cure is unique because it's broken the revenue barrier, you know.
Okay.
There is a heartbeat of cash flow here that will never be big enough to make the company profitable on its own, but at least the numbers give us a baseline scenario for evaluating less advanced plays in the here and now.
All right. That is, and I keep coming back to that because that is an interesting way to characterize this. You really do start, even though you're starting with an actual drug, an actual product, but it does leapfrog and it does mix in all the metaphors. It snowballs. And so finally you're working with a blockbuster platform with all these tiny little drugs. And
yeah,
that's a business. Okay. And that is the future. I like that. It sounds almost personalized. So who else do you love?
You know, right now, we love oncology is everywhere, or Wall Street wants right now. You know, the big boys like Bristol Myers, Merck, Eli Lilly, slugging it out in lung cancer. BMY is underrated there, still has the top franchise despite competitors. Really, there's room for everyone. That's the genius of personalized medicine. Look at the revolution in breast cancer. It all depends on the genes in question. Breast cancer is still anyone's game. Genentech opened a lot of doors there. It's a shockingly huge market. 13% of the female population get it. 6% of all Americans in their lifetime. Lung cancer is even more deadly, but incidence is enormous, and it's edging up year by year. Every case is different. There are millions of cases. That's room for blue ocean of therapies, a mosaic approach.
Cool.
You know? That's why we have biotech so much on our minds these days.
Very cool. I like the flip side of that too. It's if Cure is building a franchise out of niches, breast cancer is really it's an epidemic. But then we break it down, target the niches, go niche by niche, gene by gene, and personalize it. And there is room for everyone to handle a niche, take a slice out, and ultimately cure the disease. That's I'm gonna have to think about that and come back to you later. I think that's really gonna take some pondering. And then biotech, obviously it is hot right now, as you say. Any other industries or sectors that you're looking at right now?
I mean, the Wealth Advisor has always been very connected with fintech, obviously. Asset Mark's on fire, InvestNet, even hotter. These companies are the cloud platforms that automate investment decisions. Effectively, consumer algorithmic trading systems or robo-investing, as is these days. But it's really the only vibrant piece of financial landscape. they're relatively small companies, which is like what makes them so interesting. Investnet's market cap has a market cap leader. It's only $4 billion.
Wow.
But they literally manage trillions of dollars. And it's all about scale, but the scale is huge. It's enormous. Compare that market cap to a Blackstone or a Goldman Sachs. These companies will get bought out by, old stale banks and these giant asset banks. But, just look at Schwab and Ameritrade, consolidation.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I think you've convinced me there is actually some life in that stagnant old sector. And I guess fintech building some tech onto the fin, some finance back into tech, that might be the way to do it. Where do we go from here as a market then?
Well, I have 3 points. Okay. One, as we've seen and as we know, impeachment is really a non-issue for the markets. I mean, we're through that, and it barely stirred the needle. Eerily similar to 98, 99, right down to the brief yield curve inversion and the Fed pivot. What happened then? 2 years of rally, right?
Nice.
Number two, rates have bottomed. Inflation has started to top the Fed 2% target. They won't raise until the CPI strikes or this continues for at least 11 or 12 months. But they're going to find it very hard to cut again. This is it. Like, the easy money, enjoy it while you can, because this is the last. And third, I think we all know it at this point, but, 2020 recession is not going to happen. Sorry, Bears.
Cool.
I'm asking in 6 months for my 2021 macro forecast, but it takes a lot of fast deterioration to flip this trend. Sentiment can swing where it wants to, but this economy is a juggernaut.
Cool. I think we saw that on the job report today. So is this a bubble then? What's driving this?
Animal spirits are in control. and we've been seeing that for a little while now. But with rates this low, P&E on the SPY can easily hit 20 times without straining the fundamentals. Bullish equities short-term, 1 to 6 months. Bullish equities long-term, 12 months plus. Middle-term, 6 to 12 months will be volatile. Our SPY target for July is 3,600. Our SPY target for December, it's either going to be 3,000 or 4,000, and probably not anywhere in between.
Okay, I'm connecting those dots. That sounds like it's the election. We'll know a lot more in the summer.
Exactly.
All right. Any other risk factors? We had the trade war. We got virus threats. It feels like the wall of worry, it raises every week, but then it recedes again. Well, what are you hearing out there?
I mean, with the trade war, the worst is over. I mean, we've seen that. no escalation and no material upside until after the election. Phase one was really more about good vibes than material progress, not a solution working toward a solution.
Okay.
China worked to contain food inflation around the winter holidays. Buying U.S. food helps there. And it helps Washington score a win also. Everything else is secondary. Tariffs are here for the remainder of the year. Not a factor for corporate America at this point. Part of, like, we've been dealing with this. It's the status quo right now. YOY impact, negligible, just part of the environment now. But we know no new tariffs are coming. Escalation has stopped. You know, the mood can heal. And animal spirits can take over.
Nice. I think I'm going to stop you there then, because that's the best note we can end on. The party goes on as long as it has to. Excellent. Well, thank you, sir. This has been great, thought-provoking, and we will talk again real soon.
Sounds good. Sounds great.
Excellent. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Scott.